for argument this morning is United States versus Gaspar Miguel. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Segovia. My name is Amanda Skinner. I'm here on behalf of Ms. Patrona Gaspar Miguel. The district court in this case directly determined that the definition of entry as it is used in 1325 entry without inspection cases includes the element of freedom from official restraint. The district court erred, however, in determining that surveillance that an alien is unaware of cannot be found to be official restraint. If this court is to rule as the government is requesting, this court will create a circuit split on both of those issues.
With the Ninth Circuit?
Yes, Your Honor, but the definition...
That happens a lot. That happens a lot.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Your Honor, the First, Third, Fifth, and Ninth Circuits have all determined that the definition of entry in criminal cases does include an element of freedom from official restraint.
What are the statutory elements of the criminal offense?
Entry into the United States at somewhere other than a port of entry without inspection.
All right.
So we need to define the term entry. We need to know what the definition of enter actually is.
And you want us to use the civil aspect into the criminal elements.
As the First, Third, Fifth, and Ninth Circuits have done, Your Honor. We have over a century of legal precedent basically defining this term as including the element of entering without official restraint. And that's because...
Well, now, we have a situation here where the official restraint was that somebody had a binocular on this person as she snuck in. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And she didn't know it.
She did not know it.
And nobody stopped her.
She was stopped, Your Honor.
Well, she was caught.
Yes, and she essentially gave herself up to the Border Patrol in this case. The Ninth Circuit has determined that surveillance that an alien is unaware of can constitute official restraint. And I'm not aware of any circuit that has said, that has laid down a rule that it is not official restraint for it to be surveillance that the alien is unaware of.
On the civil side, in the civil immigration context.
That's correct, Your Honor, but I would direct the court to a Sixth Circuit case, Lopez v. Sessions. In that case...
Is that in your brief?
It is, Your Honor, okay. And it's from 2017, so it's a post-1996 IIRIA amendment case. And in that case, the Sixth Circuit essentially patted the government on the back, saying, good for you, government, you are not asking for different readings or different interpretations of the term enter across the civil or the criminal context. And what I would direct this court to is that the Sixth Circuit said the government has no warrant to use Chevron deference to take opposing positions about the same concept just because it may help the government in some cases to do one thing and help them in other cases to do something.
But there, Judge Ed was specifically talking about a civil case. The Sixth Circuit case was not a criminal 1325 case.
Right? It was not, Your Honor, but I think that language is instructive.
Well, let me probe that a little bit. Now, the cases don't talk about Chevron deference in this particular context, with the lone exception, I think, of Judge Sutton. But with civil cases, Chevron would apply to the application of in re La Payere, right? In taking the BIA's decision in re La Payere in the civil context, right? Chevron would trigger deferential scrutiny over the BIA's interpretation in re La Payere in a civil case, correct?
Of the term enter, yes, Your Honor.
But Chevron has no bearing on a criminal case, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So wouldn't that be a particularly good reason that we might have, not on the issue that you're talking about, but on the issue that the judge relied on having a different interpretation of constant surveillance as being a form of official restraint in a civil context where we're bound by Chevron and in a criminal case where we're not bound by Chevron?
I understand the court's question, but I would respectfully disagree. In the criminal context, enter means more than the mere act of crossing a borderline. You have to have had the opportunity to go at large. And so we don't care so much about what the alien knew or didn't know in terms of whether or not they were going to be caught. We care about, was the government able to stop them?
Why?
Your Honor, I think the Fifth Circuit has some cases that deal with people who are, and I believe they are civil, but crossing the Rio Grande.
Well, isn't that important that they're civil? I mean, you say there are all these different, the only criminal application is the Ninth Circuit.
Your Honor, I believe the First, Third, and the Fifth have applied the definition of entry that we are asking this court to adopt that's been, you know, precedent for 110 years or more, that the First, Third, and Fifth have also used that definition in the criminal context. And the district court in this case determined that the term enter, as used in 1325, does include an element of freedom from official restraint. The district court's issue in this case was the surveillance that the alien is unaware of.
Right, yeah, yes.
It's sort of important.
Surveillance does not equal official restraint.
That was the district court's yes. ruling in this case, Your Honor. And the important distinction that we want to make is that that act of crossing the borderline does not mean that you successfully entered the United States if you never had the opportunity to go at large. And the government routinely...
Well, how far would they have to go to be at large?
Well, that would depend on, was there surveillance? Was there a Border Patrol agent right there who could have grabbed them? I think it's instructive that the government charged in this case and all 1325 cases entered or attempted to enter.
What if DHS were to simply follow the person and never take any action to restrain that person and conduct a surveillance to try to find out maybe that person's contacts, much like the FBI or the DEA constantly will surveil sting operations, the DEA will surveil a drug operation, and we would never think to say, no, I think no defense counsel would ever think to say, okay, well, the FBI had monitors surveillance on this cell of cocaine, but we're not going to prosecute this person because that person didn't have the freedom to conduct that sale because we were watching it. Well, there's certainly mens rea, there's an actus reus. And so how does it make sense to draw this differentiation of there's no volition simply because it was being watched?
Well, first, Your Honor, those are not our facts. If the government wanted to expend the resources to covertly follow a migrant for hours, days, weeks, years, I would argue that under the definition of enter, they did not successfully enter the United States. They did not have the opportunity to go at large, whether they knew it or not. But the Ninth Circuit does a nice job of sort of parsing these situations when we're dealing with surveillance or triggering a... forgetting the word now, but basically stepping on something that says, okay, there's someone at this, you know, physical area, a sensor, thank you, that is not official restraint. We weren't able to, you know, Border Patrol was not able to go in and grab that person. They didn't have eyes on them, so they had the opportunity to go at large. Even losing sight of someone could potentially mean that it's not official restraint anymore. They had the opportunity to go at large. And I don't think that the government's argument that it would be an absurd result is persuasive. The government gives an example of multiple people who cross at the same time and Border Patrol keeps eyes on, you know, one of them but not the other. Those individuals are both properly charged under 1325 illegal entry, one under the entered theory and one under the attempted entry theory. Now, at trial in this case, the government did not ask for alternative findings from the magistrate under the attempt theory. The magistrate simply determined, I'm not going to go for this argument on official restraint. I'm finding her guilty of entry. Then on appeal, the district court said, actually, entry has been defined for over 110 years. It does include a freedom from official restraint, but I'm just not going to go as far as surveillance. So the penalties are the same, punishable by up to 6 months in prison. It's a misdemeanor, same penalty assessment, same possible fine opportunity. And as I said, the government properly charges these cases under both theories. The only reason that this has become or did become an issue in our district is because of the number of migrants coming to the United States seeking asylum. If someone is prosecuted under the attempt theory, it then becomes a specific intent crime, and it is thus relevant whether this person intended to give themselves up to seek asylum. The testimony in our case was that my client's thoughts immediately upon finding Border Patrol was, thank God they found us, we're here for help. And so her, if her testimony was to be believed by the magistrate, I believe she would have been found not guilty under the attempt theory. She traveled with her son in broad daylight. She sought Border Patrol, gave herself up immediately, and was here not to break the law of the United States, but rather to seek asylum. And the fact finder in even an attempt theory could still find an asylum seeker guilty under that theory. If someone crosses at night under the cover of darkness, if they are found hiding in a bush, if they run when Border Patrol tells them to stop, these would all be factors that the court could consider to say, I don't find you credible that you intended to give yourself up. I do believe you had the specific intent.
Well, on the absurd result situation, it seems if you're going to go with this surveillance concept as being within official restraint, wouldn't you run the game of the Border Patrol saying, okay, now we know what the law is, so whenever I see someone crossing the border, I will intentionally turn to my co-agent and say, Joe, I am looking away now for 10 minutes. Please note that in your notebook.
Both the government and the district court bring that up as a concern, and frankly, that is troubling that the district court and the government believe that Border Patrol would shirk their surveillance duties and or be dishonest in their reports or at trial.
It all gets back to what you define as their duties. I suppose some would think that they are trying to restrain people that are entering the United States illegally.
And that is the crux of the issue, Judge Briscoe. Was my client restrained? Did she have the opportunity to go at large, whether she knew it or not? No, she did not. Border Patrol knew exactly where she was. They had eyes on she and her son the entire time and captured them immediately before she could actually effectuate an entry into the United States. I would like to point this court to its 1999 decision, which again is a post-96 amendment case, U.S. v. Encinas Rodriguez. A magistrate in our district on a trial that is cited in our briefing, the Ajudar case, found, as did the district court, that they thought that this court would be likely to adopt the definition of entry that we are proposing, because in Encinas Rodriguez, this court had the opportunity to basically reject the defendant's argument on the grounds that entry does not include the element of freedom from official restraint, and this court did not do that.
And the other magistrate court went the other way.
Yes, Your Honor. In our district.
Yeah.
Yes. If there are no further questions, I'd like to reserve the remaining 2 minutes.
Sure. Thank you.
Ms. Skinner.
May it please the court. In no other arena of criminal law does the fact that a law enforcement officer observed somebody commit a crime mean that they did not commit the crime. That's exactly what the term of art definition of entry would do. It would nullify what would otherwise be an unlawful entry by an alien into the United States simply because, unbeknownst to the alien, a Border Patrol agent on a hill with binoculars observed the alien from the time that they crossed into the United States until the time of their apprehension. It defies common sense.
Well, one would say that the government defied common sense when it took this very position that gave rise to the official restraint doctrine as a vehicle to limit the rights of non-citizens.
The government did take that position historically in the context in which it arose, which was historically in the civil immigration context. Congress has since explicitly excised the definition of entry from the statute, specifically because of the perverse incentives that reading of the statute created. You know, in 1996, in the Illegal Immigration Reform and Immigrant Responsibility Act, Congress eliminated entry, which had a judicial gloss that included official restraint, and the House Judiciary Committee specifically noted that it was doing so to eliminate entry as a linchpin for allocating procedural rights because it had a tendency to turn or create disputes that turned on, quote, The elusive question of whether an illegal alien had been apprehended immediately upon entry or evaded government control for a period of time.
Well, maybe I'm misremembering this, but I thought in 1996 what Congress did was in the INA to repeal the definition of entry, which had a broad definition, after N. Ray LaPierre, after these various circuit court decisions that had adopted the official restraint doctrine. Am I misremembering?
So by the time you get to
there was nothing in the pre-1996 definition of entry talking about the official restraint doctrine. That the word official restraint doctrine wasn't repealed in 1996. What they repealed was the definition of entry, which was the very broad definition that you're embracing.
Correct, Your Honor. But when Congress legislates, it's presumed to have an awareness of judicial and administrative interpretations as they develop over time. And after 1952, when the definition of entry was put into the statute, that term entry had been continued to be defined as including that judicial gloss. And so if the excising of entry from the statute wasn't clear enough based on that canon of construction, you had the House Judiciary Committee report that makes that explicit. It makes it abundantly clear.
Well, they excised that definition, but then they persisted in later verbiage to use the word entry.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All of that history and stuff we knew before comes back in, doesn't it?
Not necessarily. The court would then be giving an interpretation to entry that Congress has since explicitly rejected.
So now DOJ would take the position that if a non-citizen is constantly surveilled and they enter the United States, they would not be entitled to exclusion. They would not be entitled to a deportation proceeding.
It's no longer relevant at all in the civil immigration context, because now what they did is they've consolidated deportation and exclusion proceedings into removal proceedings. And so entry is no longer the linchpin for allocating procedural rights. So even in the context in which the official restraint doctrine arose, it was an ill fit, and Congress excised it from the statute for that reason. Judge Briscoe, to get to your point, nothing in the statute compels the interpretation put forth by Gaspar Miguel. Terms that aren't defined in the statute, as the statute exists today, enter is not a defined term. Courts are to give them their common everyday meaning, and that's especially important in the criminal context because it gives adequate notice to individuals as to what type of conduct is prohibited. Everyday aliens need to know where they must enter, and everyday aliens are not specialists in immigration law with an awareness of this historical doctrine and what it means to be officially restrained. Additionally, Supreme Court case law is very clear on this point, that the same term within the same statute does not necessarily have to be given the same meaning. And in treating the same term in the same statute differently, the Supreme Court has explicitly said that you should give effect to the term as befitting the context in which it arises and the purpose of the statute. Here, 1325A1 and A2 and A3 all make it abundantly clear that if you want to come to the United States as an alien, you got to go through the port. And when you get to the port, you can't evade inspection at the port. That's A2. And then when you get to A3, when you're dealing with immigration officials, you have to be honest in your dealings with them. That's it. The purpose of the statute, 1325 as a section is simply foundational. It's just a predicate for enforcing all the other immigration laws that Congress has enacted and all the regulations that have been enacted to effectuate those laws. Even if this court finds that for some reason a plain language analysis compels the conclusion that entry should be given a specialized meaning, this court should employ the absurd results canon, which basically says that when a plain language analysis compels a reading of a statute that leads to an absurd outcome not intended by Congress, the absurdity exception is triggered to avoid giving effect to the statute, a reading that would produce that outcome. There are three ways in which the appellant's proposed interpretation of enter produces absurd results. First, as I said earlier, in no other arena of criminal law does seeing a crime occur somehow negate the fact that it occurred. If law enforcement, a police officer sitting outside a bank, observes a robbery and stops the robbers after they come out, we wouldn't say that the bank robbery hadn't been committed. And we wouldn't say that the appropriate charge is attempted bank robbery. The same is true here. The context distinguishes you know, how the statute should be interpreted. The second way, and in a related point, grafting the official restraint doctrine onto entry leads to criminal punishment by lottery. And surely Congress couldn't have intended that, that whether you are guilty of a crime turns on conduct completely unrelated to you. And Judge Bachrach, you made this point. In criminal law, you have a prohibited conduct with a requisite culpable mind, then you've committed the crime. This adds an additional element to that equation, which is that, well, unless law enforcement sees you do it, that produces an absurd result.
Well, how do you deal with the point that opposing counsel made about Judge Sutton's criticism of this very notion that the same word, entry, can mean different things, one that benefits the government, at least prior to 1996, and one that is unfavorable to the government? How do you deal with that argument that the word entry should mean the same thing in a civil and criminal context?
Well, because we have to distinguish the context. For civil immigration purposes, if the government is going to interpret entry in a way, in a specialized way, it has to do so consistently. But we're not there. We're in the criminal realm, which is completely distinct. And, you know, the BIA has, you know, this, it, Gaspar Miguel, I'm sorry, appellant's counsel has conceded that this court doesn't owe any deference to an agency interpretation of a criminal statute. The third way in which, and I'm sorry, let me go back to why it's unfair to allocate criminal liability on this basis. The court doesn't need to look any farther than the Ninth Circuit case law to see that absurd results are indeed produced. In the Ninth Circuit, if a Border Patrol agent sees an alien cross into the United States, but then loses them for a number of seconds, they're still under official restraint. If they find them 100 yards in north of the boundary, but they didn't see them cross, then they were free from official restraint. An alien, however, if they observe them as they cross, but then lose them for 500 yards and don't find them within that time period, then they aren't under official restraint. And in another case, you had a group of aliens jump over together. Border Patrol saw them do it, and then one of them ran away, was lost for a period of time. So there's no reason for allocating criminal punishment based on this distinction. And these issues are only going to increase as technology gets better and better at detecting when people have made an unlawful entry into the country. These issues are only going to become exacerbated, which leads me to the third reason that this produces absurd results, and that is that it disincentivizes or discourages the forward deployment of Border Patrol at the border. Judge Briscoe, I think you made this point very well when you talked about how Border Patrol agents may decide to turn and look away. You know, in another hypothetical situation, they could just decide to police the boundary 100 yards back. Mm-hmm. But that produces an absurd result that's contrary to the purpose of the statute.
But the Border Patrol were also charged not only with criminal responsibilities, with civil responsibilities. So how do you deal with the opposing counsel's argument that your theory presupposes that Border Patrol, even if they're willing to skirt the law for criminal purposes, are going to fail to heed their responsibilities, at least to keep, on the civil side, to keep non-citizens out of the country illegally?
Well, I think they could attempt to effectuate both purposes by losing somebody for a period of time, but then, you know, setting up a wall maybe, or putting agents in a position north of them that eventually they're discovered, and then they could effectuate both of those purposes. But you know, we just have to look at the text of the statute. Is that what Congress meant when it said it's unlawful to enter at any time or place not designated by immigration officials? The text is pretty clear on its face as to all that is required to effectuate an unlawful entry. And briefly, I'd like to note that instead of going the way that the Ninth Circuit has and, you know, allocating criminal punishment by lottery, the court should look to the Fifth Circuit, which I disagree with the appellant's counsel that they've adopted it. They've explicitly rejected it. In August 2018, after the government had submitted its brief, the Fifth Circuit in Garcia Montejo, in an unpublished opinion where there was an alleged Rule 11 violation that basically said that a Rule 11 violation occurred because they didn't discuss the official restraint doctrine in the context of a 1326 plea colloquy, the Fifth Circuit specifically said that that couldn't constitute plain error because the court's prior decision in Rojas, a binding decision, made it clear that the Fifth Circuit had, quote, never explicitly adopted the official restraint doctrine, end quote. So the Fifth Circuit simply hasn't done this in the criminal realm. So this court is under no obligation to give the term enter a specialized meaning, and there are good reasons not to. Doing so would be contrary to the text, design, purpose, and purpose of the statute, and would ignore the history and Congress's specifically excising it from the statute. You know, as I noted before, the text already specifically delineates the circumstances that make somebody's entry unlawful. It says enter into the United States at any time or place not designated by immigration officials. It already specifies all the circumstances that are necessary to commit the crime. As I mentioned before, the design of the statute favors that type of reading. A1 through 3 simply say, come to the port, don't elude inspection through the port, and be honest in your dealings with port officials. The surrounding provisions also support that interpretation. Section 1321 requires that every single person, or puts an obligation on every person to prevent the landing of aliens into the United States at any time or place not designated by immigration officials, or face a $3,000 penalty for failing to do so. Section 1324 makes it a felony to bring to the United States an alien to the United States at any time or place that's not designated by immigration officials, even if the alien has the authority to enter the United States. The mandate is clear. Present yourself at port. You know, appellant's counsel noted how these cases have arisen, and that is because of, you know, individuals wanting to come to the United States to present an asylum claim. And that's certainly understandable, and they certainly should be able to do so. But as I noted in my opening brief, within a 25-mile stretch of land, there were four ports of entry that Ms. Gaspar Miguel could have gone through, and that 500,000 people in the same month that she entered had gone through. And if you look at, I believe there's a map in the opening brief, there are four ports of entry, and she chose to enter between two of them. So there's nothing unfair about requiring people to present themselves at ports of entry, and Congress has expressly required them to do so. At the end of the day, this court should reject the notion that mere surveillance constitutes restraint and somehow negates a crime. Giving the statute that interpretation would be contrary to its text, completely at odds with its purpose, and would produce absurd results. And for those reasons, we would ask the court to affirm the district court, either on the ground that enter should be given its everyday meaning, or that giving it a specialized meaning would produce an absurd result, and therefore mere surveillance does not constitute restraint. Thank you.
Thank you.
The record in this case includes testimony from my client about why she entered where she entered. She entered exactly as her brother entered over a decade ago, and he eventually became a U.S. citizen. So I think that this court can rest assured that many people crossing the southern border are not sophisticated, do not understand what a port of entry is or where one is, and that was my client's testimony at trial in this case. This can be a very limited decision by this court. My client was under constant surveillance when she came into the United States. She immediately gave herself up to Border Patrol, and the district court found that the proper definition includes that entry has an element of freedom from official restraint. And again, the government did not ask for alternative findings under this theory. I think the government and the district court were both concerned about the surveillance issue because they want this court to believe that it would negate people's guilt, or I think the government was saying it was, you know, some sort of a lottery. It doesn't negate guilt. The magistrate in my case could have still found Ms. Gaspar Miguel guilty, and then I would be here this morning on plain error review, and that's a very different situation than where we are now on a de novo review. So even for an asylum seeker with very sympathetic facts, a magistrate could or a finder of fact could still find that person guilty of an attempted entry. So this is not going to result in, you know, wholesale negation of guilt along the border in our area. I would disagree with the government that entry is no longer relevant in the civil context, and I think Lopez v. Sessions takes care of that. There's specific groups of individuals who may be subject to special rule cancellation of a removal, depending on whether or not they entered the United States because of specific programs, and that was what was at issue for the defendant in Lopez v. Sessions, and it definitely mattered whether he entered and was free of official restraint, and that's why that case was remanded back to the BIA specifically for that determination. I'd also just briefly ask this court to consider the cases out of the Fifth Circuit, never explicitly adopting the issue of surveillance being official restraint does not mean that it has been completely rejected. Those cases are plain error review, and that's not the situation we're in here. So I would ask this court to determine that entry does include a freedom from official restraint, but to reverse the district court on the issue of whether surveillance that the alien is unaware of constitutes such restraint.
Thank you. Thank you both for your arguments this morning. The case is submitted. Court is adjourned.